Hello? Okay, well, you know what, dude? Don't make us wait again. Nah, it's cool. Hurry up, though, or I'll kill you. Physically. Or I sent you a... Well, you hit the link. That's what we use during the show. That's kind of our notes. I just sent it to you, like, maybe 15 minutes ago. You just need... Trust me, it's going to be easy. Why are you being so nervous about it? It's not America. Are you sweating right now? Yeah, you're sweating, dude. Don't sweat on the podcast.
Hey there, welcome to The Horrible Show, the video game podcast for HorribleNight.com. I'm your host, Justin, gamertag JDevil. This is the episode for Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. Tonight we're joined by our special guest and some of our normal crew, starting with Cole out in California.
What's up?
And Ethan in Indianapolis.
Why did you sound disappointed when you said normal crew?
I get excited about guests, that's all.
Oh, okay. Hello!
And then also, Ethan's brother that's in California, you do the geography. Nathan, the prophecy, welcome. How are you?
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for joining us. We brought Nathan on to kind of introduce our new series, the Think of the Adult series, where we talk through growing up being a gamer and becoming an adult, having responsibilities and trying to balance game time. And so we've got a range of relationship levels in the room, I guess, the internet room. And so we'll be having a roundtable discussion about that. But as per usual, we're going to start off with our threesomes of the week, where everybody lists off three types of media that have had their attention the past week. And then we'll jump to our on-the-spot question to get warmed up. Then our Think of the Adults conversation, HorribleNight.com updates, and then game industry shoutouts to take it home. But before we get into all that, I want to introduce everybody to Nathan, the prophecy, starting off with where's your gamer tag come from?
The gamer tag was actually adopted my first year of college when my entire dorm was pretty much playing Counter-Strike when it first came out in beta. So I was trying to think of something creative. I've got the gamertag Mighty Mo 32 as well, but I wanted something that personally would strike a little bit of fear in people, and I figured go with the biblical thing and go with the prophecy. So that's where it started.
So was it a hit, or did people make fun of you for it?
Pretty much people make fun of me for everything else but the tag, so okay. I think I was pretty safe with it. I was all right.
But strangers are afraid until they get to know you. That's the important
exactly
part. Well, see, when I hear prophecy attached to your name, Nathan, I just think, oh, and, you know, the future, a really nice guy is going to come and talk to you. So it's not that intimidating.
That's the nice thing. It's flexible. People can take it as they wish.
And then a follow-up question. What's your first kind of standout gaming memory, how you got into games?
You know, I think the first thing is our father pretty much ruined us by buying a Sega Master System for us when I think I was like 6 or 7 years old. And it was the original Rambo game. And man, it was over after that. It was over after that. So pretty much we never had a basic Nintendo until after the Sega Master System. But pretty much I've bought every system since then, with the exception of some of the current gen stuff due to lack of time.
So did you dominate the console? I mean, you're a little bit older than your two brothers.
Yeah, I think we. I want to say I think we shared it. I think they may have a different perspective. I think it was something that the three of us could get into. I think Matthew was too young at the time to really understand it much.
Too young and stupid.
Ethan, you didn't qualify that with an at the time.
Right. I remember that's some pretty good memories with Ethan, actually, is playing two player on Rambo. It was a lot of fun when we got that.
Yeah, he's talked quite a bit about Double Dragon. Any fond memories there?
Oh, yeah, same thing. I think he kicked my ass pretty much all the time.
You guys are on the same team. Don't you get it?
Until the end.
Right. And he always ended up getting the chick.
Wow. That's a metaphor or something. All right. Let's jump into our threesomes, starting with Coleman.
I said it last week that I was downloading Inception to watch it. Finally got to watch it. Holy shit, that movie is awesome.
I think my prediction held strong that you would like
it. Yeah. And you know what, though? I was talking about this with my wife, and maybe it's because we watched the most confusing movie I've ever watched before we watched Inception, called Primer. But we weren't really confused at all, so I don't understand why some people might have been a little, you know, like, confused with that movie. I thought it was really clear what was going on.
That was my reaction, too. I was like, they walked you through it. My reaction was, this is cool and deep, but it's not confusing. And then, I don't know what was happening. It was like the dreamings with dreams and dreams, and
wait,
it was another dream.
Does that mean that we have mental health issues if, like, Inception really made a lot of sense to us?
I think there are other signs that would point to that, too. So, I think we've all embraced that problem a long time ago. At least I have.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was just because we watched it so far, you know, away from when it was in theaters and all the hype was coming out about it, but I'm glad to hear that people who did see it in the theater feel the same way I did about not being confused about it.
No, I just thought it was just the right amount to walk you through and not be lost, but also still kind of leave some stuff open to make it interesting. So
right. And then I haven't really been listening to any music or reading lately, so I watched this documentary, which I guess is kind of like reading more than just watching a movie. It's called Blood Into Wine, and Justin, you'll appreciate this. It has the lead singer of Tool and A Perfect Circle,
Maynard.
He's big into making wine and growing grapes and all this shit in Arizona, and I had no idea. I saw, I think it might have been Coop tweet about it, maybe.
No, it was Street Alchemist.
Okay, it's Alex.
Yeah, he's obsessed with Maynard.
And I saw it was on Netflix, so I decided to check it out. It's a pretty interesting movie, and it's pretty good. So
he's an interesting fella. To say the least.
Yeah, and then I've been playing Mass Effect and a little Splosion Man here and there, but last week I dove back into Angry Birds big time, and I don't know why, just felt compelled and trying to get 3 stars on all the levels and not succeeding. So
just getting angry
at those goddamn pigs.
I've actually been doing the same thing. I found that Angry Birds is a great little game to play in between doing stuff in World of Warcraft. Like, as I'm traveling places, I'll be playing Angry Birds with one hand. So it feels like I'm accomplishing more.
You have a problem, sir.
No, I don't. I'm completely comfortable with it. But how far are you in your 3 stars?
Not very. I pretty much have the first world, I guess, done.
Yeah.
I think I'm missing like maybe 5 levels, and then from the second to the third worlds on, it's a train wreck. So
yeah, I've gotten through worlds 1 and 2, but world 3. Not even close. Like,
yeah.
I threw that fucking toucan bird, and he can... he sucks. I'm sorry. Ooh, little boomerang type bird.
Yeah, the green bird.
Yeah, he sucks. But
yeah.
In other Angry Birds news, my Angry Birds plushies came in. They're fantastic. Great. A great office toy. We're throwing them at each other all day, every day. It's fantastic. I recommend checking out the Angry Birds store for that. So... Ethan, your threesomes.
I have a question for you all. What happens when you put a who's who of Saturday Night Live veterans and a couple comedians together in a movie?
Probably sucks.
Absolutely sucks. You get a shitty movie called Grown Ups, and I was really disappointed in that movie. It sucked. It was horrible. I had no idea what it was supposed to be about. There was supposed to be some meaning to it. Completely lost on me. I mean, again, maybe this is like the... maybe this is more confusing than Inception, you know, maybe we understand Inception and like normally intelligent people understand grown-ups and like, what do you mean, dude, you don't get it? Adam Sandler like makes weird noises and shit. So
still,
yeah, I don't recommend that movie at all. I was really freaking disappointed with that. So, goes without saying, don't have much more on that.
To drag that down a little further, the saddest part about that movie is when you look at Kevin James' character and realize that's supposed to be Chris Farley's character.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
That was the Inception part of it.
That was the twist.
That was a twist. Touche, my friend. Touche. That is sad. I do miss Chris Farley.
Yes.
I do. Moving on to, well, now I was going to make a joke, but I shouldn't. So never mind. Ignore that. I got Supernatural Season 5 this weekend for Christmas. And yeah, I know what everyone's saying. It's on the CW. You know, it's got two hunky guys as the lead characters. But basically, that show is about what I want to do as my job full time, besides write for video game website. I love that show. They fight monsters and all kinds of crap. And the storyline, as the seasons have progressed, are getting a little bit more strung together, kind of like what happened to X-Files when they started just dealing with the aliens for the most part. But still, it's a pretty good show, and my wife actually watches it with me, and she's okay with it.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of cool.
I'm glad you finally found something to include her in that she enjoys.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily something that everybody else considers that good, except for today on the TV Guide. Supernatural was chosen as the cover as the show of the year. So
really,
F everybody.
Is that show still on? I thought it was getting canceled.
Yeah, it's in season 6.
Oh wow, cool.
I will say I am a little bit surprised about that. But I mean, again, it's still good. It still entertains me. So why not?
Hey, did your wife watch Grown Ups with you?
Yeah, she hated it.
Oh wow, I thought she might have liked.
We watched Inception right after that, and she loved that. So.
Nice combo.
it was again a really confusing combo, but last thing I played, I've been so addicted to Minecraft I had to pull myself away from it, because again I'm just getting lost with it and I don't want to get to that level of addiction with a game again. So I played World of Goo, which on the surface sounds like something that I do, you know, by myself in the bathroom when no one's looking, but it's actually puzzle-themed game about getting little oil guys up into a tube, which is opposite of what I tend to do by myself. So, it's fun.
Try to give praise to a really good indie game that, like, won tons of awards, and you're... I can't cut out all these masturbation references.
Yeah, I kind of got lost, but I apologize. It's an awesome game. It is a really good game. Masturbation references aside, it's really fun. I'm struggling on a level right now, but I think that's okay. I love puzzle games, and I like the kind that you make you pull your hair out, and then once you finally find the solution, you're like, well, holy shit, and you get pretty excited about it. So awesome game. Don't connect whacking off to this game, because that's not fair for the game. So,
What are you playing it on the PC?
Yeah, I'm playing. I have it on the Wii. I never really got into it.
It's actually good, pretty good on the Wii.
Is it better on the Wii than probably on the PC?
It works really well with the Wiimote, and
works your arm muscles probably more.
Let's keep it to a minimum. No, and then I guess it also just came out on the iPad, and I think it would probably play pretty well on the iPad as well. But PC's where it started, so.
Yep.
Very cool, Nathan. Your threesomes of the week.
All right. This has actually kind of been my threesomes for like the past 3 months, I feel like. But from a gaming side, Knights of the Old Republic 2. They got on sale now for $19 brand new. Bought it about 2 months ago. And I like the original game because it was not only, well, I thought a relatively good immersive game, but it's pretty supported by the modding community as well. So like when you get tired of the game, you throw some new decals on things. You got a couple new levels. Knights of the Old Republic 2, while I wish they would have had, it would have been a little bit more supported. They've got a ton of weapon models and stuff that you can kind of customize your game with. I'm only about halfway through the game. The challenging part for that is I'm a completionist by nature, so I got to have everything in the game. and I start second-guessing who I'm going to turn into Jedi and who I'm not. So it's one of those games that's kind of like Ethan. It got so addictive after a while but I had to put it away for a little bit before I started playing it too much.
But that game's also got the really big, like, you know, differences of playing like a good guy versus a bad guy. So do you play it twice?
See, and that's the whole problem is all my decisions right now is I always go through being good and then be a complete dickhead for the second half, like when I play the game over again. So I actually started characters simultaneously to see what decisions were being made. So, like I said, man, we talk about mental illness and gaming. No. That's my big one.
No, I've lived that nightmare.
Yeah.
I was doing that in Fable, and yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think for a game of its age, it's still got a lot of playability to it, and it's a lot of fun. So
I never played the second one, but how does it compare to the first one?
You know, I think because the first one was like brand new genre for me that I really hadn't dabbled with a whole lot. I love the first one. I think the second one has a couple themes that it replicates a little bit. I mean, it's a Star Wars universe, so you're gonna get some of that. But no, I mean, it's entertaining. It's fun. There's a ton of dialogue. I mean, that's just the nature of the game. And that'll get a little repetitive, but well, a lot of times you just want to hit the X button to pull out your lightsabers from their hilt and swing them around and look like a badass.
Well, I just remember it wasn't the same studio that made the first one. I mean, they worked with BioWare, but it's one of those few series that was handed off and didn't have a steep drop off. So that's right. good to know.
Is that MMO?
What's that?
Is that massively multiplayer?
No,
not just single player campaign.
Is it okay?
It's pretty much like the Mass Effect prequel.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Gameplay-wise. So.
Exactly.
What else you got?
My second one, moving on to my second game, we'll talk about my little World of Warcraft episode when the kids were first born here a little bit later, but Runes of Magic for me has been the first MMORPG that I've taken a character past level 25 and still enjoyed it.
Oh, cool.
Runes of Magic is kind of cool because a lot of people call it a Warcraft knockoff, which there's a lot of gameplay similarities with it, which is why I like it. My big thing is I don't want to pay monthly for a subscription for something that maybe there may be a month that I can't play the game.
Yeah.
Runes of Magic's kind of cool because it's free, but in order to really get end game and get a lot of the cool stuff, the weapons, the mounts, the different things like that, you got to pay a little bit of money for it. And it's funny because originally I didn't understand that business plan at all. It made no sense to me. But as I've gotten into this more, it allows for a lot more flexibility for the casual gamer. So I love the game. I definitely check it out. It's a free download. I got like four characters on that thing now too. So
how old is that game? Do you know?
It's funny. People joke about it, and some of the community gets a little pissed off because it's technically still in beta, and it's been in beta for almost a year now.
Oh wow!
But they've already put out something like five or six new maps. They've made enhancements to some of the skills. There's only two playable classes, but I think once the thing gets out of beta, they're going to look at expanding that. But they didn't want to make it so World of Warcraft-ish with the character selection.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Cool.
So my last one is the pretty much the only TV show anymore that I consider a staple, AMC's The Walking Dead.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about that one. What do you think?
Well, you know, my thing is, it's the first time I've ever seen a pickaxe go through a zombie's head on cable TV. That's pretty badass. Yeah. So while I think there's parts in the story that, you know, they're a little corny, they're a little, you can kind of see them coming down the road. I think the mere fact that they've taken the concepts of a zombie movie and made a series out of it, and it's allowed them to be a little bit more flexible with the characters, has been entertaining for me. Again, I'm not the greatest critic because for me, if I like watching it, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to critique stuff too heavily, but like with that particular show, it's kept my interest enough to keep coming back. So
I wish I could shut off that critic side of my brain to watch a show like that.
Right.
Cole, did you get caught up on that show? Has everybody seen the whole thing?
Yeah, I still haven't seen the last two episodes.
All right,
but I'm doing it this week. So
no, I'm just disappointed. There's such a long break in between the seasons, and
yeah.
Curious to see what happens now that the guy fired the entire writing staff too. But
did that really happen? Because I heard that, I read that, and then I read that he came back and said no, he didn't fire the entire staff. But is that?
I've only heard the first one, so okay. I'm hoping you're right.
No, yeah. I heard the second. I heard Ethan said that, or what Ethan said, that he had come back and said that one of the guys left to go do another show, so he didn't fire everybody. But I think they're just gonna do. I can't even think of the word. Like, they're just gonna hire out for individual
freelance
stuff. Yeah, freelance, that's the word. And instead of having a writer's room. And so, I mean, Darabont has most control over that show anyway, so it could work out to be a beneficial move, but you never know.
It's just interesting. I mean, as much as that show is taking off, that he could, I don't know, cut off everybody before it makes all the money that's going to be coming its way.
We're doing really good right now. Yeah, you're all fired.
And I wonder what are the political factors behind that, because I was really surprised. I mean, by going to AMC, they've got more flexibility in what they can do with the script, I think, from like, you know, a larger network. But I think I'm most surprised. I never watched AMC prior to this.
Yeah.
So it's got me going to that channel, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with the show. My threesomes kicked off with one of my favorite movies of all time, Hackers. I finally just, I don't know, decided to pop that on Netflix the other day and hadn't watched it outside of, you know, randomly catching it on cable. And I love that movie, but it's just funny. I never realized how little of dialogue is actually in the movie, because it's essentially dream sequence to montage to dream sequence to montage to dream sequence to montage. Like, and it's so ADD, it's hilarious, but now I understand why I liked it so much and why it's hung on, just because there's really, you know, there's no meat in that movie to sink your teeth into. It just, it is what it is, and it's, I don't know, it's entertaining, and the more that technology advances, the sillier it is, but at the same time, it just has this nostalgia factor anymore that I love every bit of it, and plus it's, you know, it's the origin of Angelina for me, so it's got that going for it. I also wanted to have a little brief moment of silence for the career of Matthew Lillard. But anyway, any other Hackers fans?
Oh yeah.
I love Fisher Stevens.
Wasn't he in Short Circuit?
Yeah, he was in Short Circuit. But was it? Is it Johnny Miller in that movie too?
Yeah. I think they got, like, him and Angelina got married right after that movie.
Yeah.
So, anyway, moving on to the other game I've been playing in my downtime is NBA Jam. Been playing through the Remix Tour, and that game is fucking hard. I don't know if my skills have just deteriorated, but I cannot punch a guy to save my life. And the way the Remix Tour works is you play through the individual conferences, and you have to play each team three times in three different types of games, because they kind of mix them up with like 21 and some other like kind of hotspot types of games, plus the classic NBA Jam style. And each time you play them, the computer assistance is more and more ridiculous, and I can't for the life of me beat it on normal NBA Jam on the hardest difficulty, just because that computer assistance is kicking my ass. But game's still a lot of fun to play. Looks great. I still haven't decided if it's worth $50. We'll see if somebody else ends up buying the game and we play it online if it sticks. But it has definitely deterred me from going down the path of getting an arcade machine, just because I kind of have one I need in my living room right now. So, but check that out if you get the chance. Look, it's pretty cool.
Plus, you can't really play online with an arcade machine. Somebody has to actually come to your house to play against you. So,
boo!
Yeah, you should. Yeah. I've had the logistics in my head for that for a while. This makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah. So did have you played the where you have to fight like the bosses, like Magic Johnson?
No, I haven't gotten there yet.
I was gonna see if my prediction with the Yao Ming has come true.
What, building the Great Wall of China?
Yes, as defense.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his gift will be. No, I'm too completionist right now. I'm not moving on from a conference until I beat all three levels.
So is basketball an option in one of those?
That would be awesome. Using the Kinect that you can shout psych outs, Steve Perry. And the guy just falls over. Music-wise, I made a post a couple weeks ago about a lot of the remix albums that are available for the Legend of Zelda series, but a new one just came out for called The Threshold of a Dream, which is only the Link's Awakening game, and It's a free download, and it's just a really great combination of Zelda music, and I've been enjoying it while working. So check that out. We'll post a link to it. All right. Lengthy threesomes, just like I like them. And now moving on to the on-the-spot question. This week, just want to kind of recap your gaming glory days and recall your greatest marathon gaming session, starting with Ethan.
When I was in high school, right before I left for Purdue, I stayed up all night and played Metal Gear Solid 2 to completion. I liked Metal Gear Solid, and I have no, but I didn't super love it. You know what I mean? I have no idea why I played Metal Gear Solid 2 at all, and I have no idea why I stayed up all night and beat the game that quickly. It was pretty amazing. I was impressed. And I had to drive to Chicago the next day, too. So safe to say it was a great marathon gaming session, but probably not the most intelligent one.
So you were impressed by yourself or impressed by the game?
Both.
Okay. I think I had a similar stride with that game, that there's just a certain point where you got to keep going. But that's definitely one of the PS2 classics for sure. Cole?
The first time I got to actually play Final Fantasy VII, I don't know if I had rented it or borrowed it from Nathan, because I remember watching him play it before I ever got to play it. And
I can't imagine you borrowed it from Nathan.
Yeah, I probably, he had a death grip on that thing. So I remember like sitting in my basement, which was, my teenage man cave of sorts, and playing that, and I remember a girl had called me and said, "Hey, you should come to this party." And I said, "No, I think I'm going to stay home. My parents really don't," because this is before I could drive. So I was like, "My parents really don't want to take me out." I didn't even ask my parents. I was just knew I was going to play Final Fantasy VII all night. So I turned down hanging out with girls to play video games.
Maintain that stereotype, Cole.
Yeah, well, it was by choice. I mean, I had an option to hang out with a girl. It's not like I didn't, At least there was that, right?
You had Eris. You're fine.
Nathan, you wanna?
I was just gonna clarify. I think you probably borrowed the game from me after I already beat it 2 times through, and I couldn't handle Eris dying anymore. So I lost. I cried so much. I think I was out of tears. So I had to pass it.
Wait, she dies?
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
Nathan, what about your greatest marathon gaming session?
So, back in my heyday, RPGs is like pretty much all I played. So, I really liked the Suikoden series, the first and second games especially, because I loved how if you completed the first game in its entirety, 100% completion, it carried over to the second game. I thought that was really cool. But back in college, my senior year, I had the flu for like 3 or 4 days, and instead of sleeping like I probably should have, I played through the first and second game in a day and a half, and it started at about, 10 in the morning, and went till about 6 in the morning the next day. With 100% completion, all 100 stars of Destiny, and then I felt like shit for the next 3 days.
I wonder why.
I believe it's 108 stars of Destiny.
Well, 100, yes. Correction. 108
stars of Destiny. And my other question for you, since you love the series so much, do you know how to actually pronounce the name?
I thought that's how you said it.
No. I believe it's Suikoden.
Well, I like my way better.
So. I think we all called it Suikoden for the longest time, but I remember being corrected during Justin Carr's marathon session of the third one. So,
yeah.
Anyway, two greatest marathon gaming sessions stand out to me. Again, trying to avoid going to World of Warcraft, but just know that that's why I have such an affinity for that game, is I remember some great early on sessions there. But the other one that stands out to me was just one of those all-nighters where I bought the game and literally stayed up until I beat it from the time I got home, and that was God of War 2. And that was also during a phase with one of my friends that he was kind of getting out of gaming at the time, just wasn't playing as much, but still enjoyed basically witnessing stories and witnessing great games. So every time I was excited about a game, we'd get a pizza and a bunch of caffeine and energy drinks and have a marathon session, and started about 6 o'clock at night and finished at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And that was God of War 2, and still stands out as the definitive God of War game. Kratos is easily one of my favorite characters. So let's move on to our core discussion here, thinking of the adults and talking a little bit about, you know, how you progress from being a kid gamer to realizing that, hey, I've got some extra time on my hands in college and being a bachelor, and then watching as your gameplay adjusts going through dating onto marriage and having kids and beyond that. So we're going to kind of talk through the different phases that we remember I've experienced, and I think Nathan fell down. Basically, I'll be asking you a lot of questions because I've only hit that second phase of the serious dating. So I'll be looking for advice from you guys and advice for our listeners. All right, let's start off with our kind of bachelor gaming moments, and just kind of start off with the highlights of, you know, how much were you playing, what were you playing, and what kind of stands out to you, and what kind of brought that phase to your life to a close. And I think two distinct phases stand out to me. First was getting into college, and when the PS2 came out, and I kind of was just rabid about that system, and sold a lot of my games to get a lot of games for it. And I just remember a lot of marathon sessions there. And then on to after I graduated college and was starting the job hunt, but doing a lot of freelance work, and I had a similar experience with the Xbox towards the end of its life cycle, that a couple games came out for it that I was really excited about, and lots of marathon sessions and lots of thrifty spending, just buying games left and right, and been kind of living on and off there. But I think that's where it peaked for me. It was a lot of the Xbox games, and Chronicles of Riddick was kind of the one that stuck out to me. And it was just, you know, I had a good job, I had a lot of free time, and that's just where my budget was going. And that was kind of that's where I look back to. I literally couldn't play any more games than I was playing at that time, and still having trying to balance life with it.
Yeah, I think my my peak gaming time was during that, you know, the later end of the Xbox era, and the summer of my junior year in college, when I only worked 3 days a week and was able to literally come home and play games for 3 days straight. And at the time, we had a membership to Family Video, and I did not have the money to spend on games, but I was able to go and rent games from Family Video, and I probably beat 20 games that summer. And I think that the title that actually stands out to me is The Thing, the game based on that awesome, awesome movie, just because of how frustrating it was and how I would just get so angry about it, and how people wanted to, you know, socialize with me, and I just couldn't beat the certain level of that game. And so it just, I don't know, I kind of, you know, became a recluse and just played. And that's one of the games that I have yet to beat still. I tend to beat most of the games I play, but that one has still evaded me.
Did it ever feel like it was out of control? Like, I mean,
you know, I just think it was a lazy summer, and you didn't know what it meant to. I mean, I still had time for friends. I still had, I made enough money. You didn't understand what it meant to literally spend 2 whole days playing games, and that would actually affect you. Because again, it's college mentality. Now, for me to do that, even when I have vacation, I feel like guilty and I start to itch. So it's much different nowadays.
You know, showering would take control of that itch, Ethan.
Well, I don't like to do that.
You know, what's weird is I think the biggest time period of my life that I played up until this point is when I was in high school and before. I guess I wouldn't necessarily consider that being a bachelor, but when I got to college, I started to play less and less. I mean, I definitely would have my sessions with Justin, and we'd play, you know, some sports games or some multiplayer games a lot, but there, you know, I kind of switched my addiction to watching a lot of movies and buying DVDs and not playing any games, to the point where I used my PlayStation 2, and I was one of the first people that I knew that had one, and I used it more as a DVD player than a game machine, and ended up selling it eventually, and kind of got out of it for a while. But so for a couple years, I didn't really play that many games, and then, you know, the Xbox came out, or I had some friends who had the Xbox, and it kind of sucked me back in, and I ended up buying one and started playing it. And but that's when I was already dating my current wife, so we'll get into that in a little bit.
What about Nathan?
Yeah, mine was a weird transition, because in college, you know, what really did it for me was Counter-Strike. That was the first computer game where I was like, damn, this is awesome. Like, the multiplayer aspect, playing online. So I actually sold my PS1 my sophomore year of college, I think, and then slowly, as I realized how expensive PC gaming was going to get for me to play at the level that I wanted to, I shifted back into the PlayStation realm. And I've never had an affinity for Microsoft or Xbox in general. Nothing against it. It's a good product. But I think the PlayStation's always been kind of like my go-to console. So when I got to grad school, you know, when Cole and I lived together out here in California, had a lot of time to play, but, you know, we had really weird hours that we worked. But when I went to grad school, the staff that I supervised, you know, I had classes at night. Katie was gone for work during the day, and all my students were in class. So I literally had 8 a.m. until like 4 p.m. to work on the little bit of work stuff I had to develop for that night, do some homework. But really, it was workout time and game time. So I think that started tailing off for me a little bit after grad school.
And so, yeah, that's kind of the next phase here, starting to go into not just dating, but, you know, more for, I guess, for you guys, and kind of that serious dating cycle where things kind of start to change, priorities start to shift. But how do you remember kind of introducing your gaming affinity to your significant others?
Well, it was a thing. It wasn't even a difficult thing, because I think we had played somewhere, like at a friend's house or something, and she was. My wife now, who I was dating at the time, she kind of already knew my my affinity for games. I had bought an Xbox because, like I said, my friends were playing it, and I got Madden, and then I got Burnout 3, which was just took that to a whole nother level. But and then I remember the game I remember playing most, which is so weird, and is the first game I bought in a long time, or beat in a long time, was Tomb Raider Legend. And I remember playing that with Gar in the room, watching me play it. And so at that point, it was like, okay, this girl's pretty cool. If she can watch me play a video game and not, you know, just complain the whole time. I mean, she was like probably on the computer, on the internet or whatever. But she, you know, she accepted me for me. I didn't have to hide anything. And that was the thing that sold me the most on her, for sure.
Well, I think it's good that we distinguish between dating and serious relationships, because when I was dating, there was no mention of video games. To me, dating was just, you know, getting drunk and humping. So maybe we should have had a category for that too. But I think with, you know, what Cole said is true, is it's, you know, it kind of comes with the package, if you will, that, you know, we like to play games, and we shouldn't have to hide that. And to me, that was entertainment just as, you know, reading books or watching movies. And I mean, I was, you know, with Aubrey, I was really pretty upfront with her. You know, I said, look, I really do like playing games. And when we started dating, I wasn't playing as much, but as I moved into my new roommate situation, you know, I was home a lot more. So, you know, it kind of came with the territory. And she's been really understanding, although she absolutely hates video games. And if I didn't play it, she wouldn't mind either. But she's not judgmental, if you can have that sort of, you know, mix of emotions towards video games.
Yeah, mine's always been a mix, because I agree with Ethan. It's the dating thing. Like, you know, men in general do a shitty job of talking about their needs and expectations and definitely like their outlets. And because I was kind of in this transition of you know, PC gaming, console gaming, getting rid of both of them and then bringing them both back. It was never consistent for me, but I think, you know, while we were dating, it was never much of an issue because I think we have a desire to kind of spend a lot of time to build that relationship with that potential significant other. And I know with Katie, I wanted to spend more time with her because I knew that there was going to be something down the road with us. So gaming wasn't as much of a part of my life then when we were dating.
But was it brought up? Did you have to ever feel like you had to hide it?
No, because see, for us, we were always so different because we were always an hour apart in college. So I never had a reason that like she would come over to surprise me and say, hey, let's hang out. We knew when we could see each other. So we wanted to spend that time together. My senior year of college, when she was in California, I mean, that's I had gaming time like crazy. I had one class.
You just didn't tell her about it.
Right. So, and that's where it kind of shifted a little bit. So then you move to California, you get more time together. And I think that's when some of those conflicts come up.
Yeah. Fortunately, I met Megan through a social website here in town that I was actually running rock band events for, and kind of in that social circle, I was known as Rock Band Guy. So right off the bat, she knew that I was into video games, and so that wasn't a problem of introduction. But I think that we did have a little bit of a ramp up period for her to realize how seriously I actually take them and how much time I spend with them. And but I felt like the groundwork was kind of laid for me. But we've both been. We just kind of both approach relationships that way, that you respect the other one's hobbies and what makes them happy. And, you know, as long as it's not, as long as the balance is there, and that's kind of what's important. But, the other side to me, that kind of led to why I was Rock Band Guy, I like to show off games to other people to try to get them interested in. And like, I will play, I've talked about this before, I will play games that I'm not necessarily interested in to, if I think it, think that particular person might find something in it. I mean, you know, introducing Megan to Angry Birds and now seeing her in the top 2,000 out of 4 million Angry Birds players on the leaderboard is just kind of ridiculous, but just, I like showing off games that way. And so I've done a lot of kind of experimenting with, you know, trying to find ways to introduce gaming to somebody I'm dating that isn't necessarily into games. And I've fallen on my face quite a bit. But, you know, I found like for me, you know, the music games work pretty well. Dance Central's and DJ Hero have been more recent hits. And then just any of those party games, the Wii is pretty good for that. I was trying to think of, have you guys, what other types of games have you had successes with and trying to get your significant others to play?
I think the Wii definitely, we played the Wii, and I actually, Aubrey's parents bought, a Wii for Christmas. And we actually played that for hours and hours at a time. And we played Boom Blocks a lot too. So that was a good one because again, it's fun, it's casual, and that's the only type of gamer she'll ever be. You know, I could introduce her to a million games and it's only going to stick if it's casual and it's something that we're doing together as opposed to her just watching me, you know, but if she wanted to do that, that'd be okay too.
Cool.
My wife's weird. she'll, today we were just talking before we were recording the podcast. She's like, I think I'm going to play Zuma when you're podcasting, cause I haven't played that in a long time. And so, you know, she likes her little puzzle games, but she'll also play like Return to Monkey Island or whatever, the Secret of Monkey Island games. And she likes the point and click game. She loves Myst, but she also likes Splosion Man, and she's really can't wait for me to download Limbo. she's just been asking for it. And so, I mean, she says that she can't play the 3D games. She'll get too confused. She'll get kind of like sickness or, you know, motion sickness or something. But those 2D games and playing New Super Mario Brothers and New Super Mario Brothers Wii is tantamount to her addiction, because she beat both of those games before I got a chance to, and beat them more than once. So, and collecting every single thing you could collect in that game. So, I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think she is definitely rare when it comes to having a partner that also games. She's not as addicted as I am, but she definitely does do her thing when it comes to video games.
But do you notice when they do, not to classify all girls, but just the ones I've noticed, like when they do get into a game, they're more completionist than I am.
Oh, for sure, definitely. But I think like at the same time our tastes are constantly changing, being, you know, gamers who play pretty much everything. Like we're always like, oh, let's, you know, I got to get that new game. Let me play that. And so we're more easily the type of people who are going to move on from something, and you know, they find something they like, they want to keep playing that one, even though you know, it might be the detriment to our time playing.
What about Nathan?
Kitty wants nothing to do with video games.
Fair enough.
However, I kind of agree with Ethan. I think the thing that gamers like us that are a little bit more than just casual gamers take for granted is that, I mean, we've developed over years this level of eye-hand coordination that allows us to pick up a PS3 controller that has a shitload of buttons on it. If, you know, that most people would look
That's
at
a good
and be
point.
Like, wow, I'm overwhelmed. And I think what Cole's kind of expressing too is the fact that, you know, we've got partners that weren't as engaged as we were, so it's hard for them just to pick it up like it's nothing. So I think for me, for my wife, you know, the old Super Mario Kart, like that for her was like the epitome of kind of a fun four-player game, but she loved the battle mode. She loved being princess. Like that's something she could connect with because it's easier for her to pick up. But I think, Ethan's right. The Wii bowling has been a McFeeters family hit since the damn thing came out, and it's kind of funny that the cheapest damn game in the lineup is the thing they play the most. So, I'd say that's always something we got to kind of keep in mind is, you know, there's a level of expertise that we have that's hard for most people to pick up.
Yeah, and I think that's the other draw to even some of those music games is that the barrier of entry has been leveled with everybody's kind of learning those new instruments or the new objects to play. And yes, so seeing non-gamers in general holding an Xbox 360 controller and seeing them trying to comprehend it, I mean, it's such a foreign object to so many people. We do take that for granted. And I'm going on a tangent here, but I was going to say it'd be kind of interesting if they simplify that controller for some downloadable games for the Xbox, could be another casual entry there. But
I think it's not necessarily the controller that needs to be simplified, the actual controller. It's just, you know, like Splosion Man is a perfect example. You have one button.
Yeah.
You know, a joystick and a button, and that's all you need. And, you know, females. No camera control, yeah. And females who haven't been playing games their whole lives like us could easily jump into that game.
Yeah. Kind of moving on to the next phase, kind of we'll call it the marriage phase, but also the more of the moving in phase, I guess. Like Nathan, I kind of feel like I'm in a similar situation that you are, that my relationship's a little bit longer distance, that there'll be days where I don't see her, and I kind of have my own schedule, and I've kind of adjusted my gameplay schedule to fit within that. But I also know that's the big thing that'll change for me when you're living with the person. And what advice or what experiences do you guys have with that moving in experience and adapting gaming, Ethan?
You know, I think the big difference is that, you know, in the past, you know, you knew when your significant other was going to come over, you knew when you were going to hang out. And at that point, you know, women have different needs than men do, you know, and everybody has different needs. And so once we moved in together, Aubrey really likes to spend time with me. She likes to do activities with me, and she likes to do things with other people. Mm-hmm. You know, again, me. Whereas I like to have my time to, you know, be by myself for a little bit. And that's not, you know, anything against her. You know, any other time I want to spend with her, but that's just kind of how I need to kind of relax or unwind. And really being, you know, I have to be really sensitive and, you know, be honest, but also try not to hurt her feelings when I say, hey, I'm going to take some time. I think that's a big difference because when you're dating, you're always wanting to spend time because you don't see that person as often. Once you're married, you see them every single day, and you don't want to make it seem like, oh, I'm tired of you, I want to play games now, you know, because that's where, you know, arguments have come from, is that I go up and I play computer games, and she feels that, you know, I am escaping the stress of her when I'm just taking the time that I need. the big thing I've learned to do is that, you know, we talk about specific times that I'm going to play, you know, and we make sure that, you know, nothing is planned and that I'm not just focusing a whole day on playing games. Because, I mean, realistically, once you get married and you have a lot more responsibilities, you just can't do that. And the big thing is that they got her kind of understanding where she may need to kind of reel me in a little bit with Metal Gear Solid 4. I do recall that because she's like, you know, my dad always makes fun of us playing games and he bought us the Master System, but she bought me the PS3. And she like feeds this habit. And she's like, what do you mean you want to play? And so I remember going out to the store and getting Metal Gear Solid and Resistance and Metal Gear Solid 4 and Resistance, and she was like, kind of like, oh, yeah, no, you're welcome or whatever. And then I sat down and played that game to hell. And I think that was when she knew how much I was into games. When we were dating, it was assumed, but once we were married and she saw it every day, she was like, wow, he really does enjoy playing games.
Yeah. What about Nathan, your adjustments to the distance shortening?
Yeah, because I think, you know, something else that was really weird in our transition is, you know, we got married my last year of grad school. We had completely different schedules. And then when I moved up to Davis, she was still completing her master's degree down in Stockton. So even while we were married, we still hadn't made the full transition of being on the same schedule until really our third year of marriage. So I think because of that, it's like anything else with a relationship that you value, being able to communicate that and being able to communicate your needs and then figuring out, oh, man, this feels different. Like I'm kind of like Ethan in the same sense of, you know, I need individual time to kind of recharge for the day. I mean, I work with students all day long, college students that are going through transition issues and helping them through some pretty crazy shit sometimes. And then really busy with Katie. And then, like Ethan said, the responsibilities and the mortgage payments and paying the bills. And it gets a little overwhelming. So not being able to communicate how you as individuals want to just relax for the day, I think that's a mistake that guys can make, and it's one that I made. So I think that, you know, for us, the way that I adapted that is picking up games like Fallout 3 and stuff that you could save your progress right in the middle of, rather than having to play for an hour to get to a stopping point, you know? Huh. So it's the type of game that I started picking was really about, like...
No, I'm picturing the box.
Making
the box
excuses.
No. I'm totally with them. I'm picturing, like, the back of the game box having, like, gamer warnings or like stuff kind of featured that way. That this is a good game for a married guy because it allows you to save at any point.
But there's still stuff that I like to put, you know, the Grand Theft Autos and the stuff like that that you could get into and play, you know, endlessly. The way we adjusted it is during the day, you know, when we've got stuff as a couple that we need to get done, we get it done, and I don't play games till after that. And because not only being an ugly, fat, smelly beast that I am and sweating as much as I do, I also snore like a goddamn water buffalo. So she likes to go to bed before I do, get her to sleep. So I'll play some games for a little bit, tire myself out, and then go to bed.
So. If you were on The Bachelorette, they would eliminate you like in the very first round.
Well, I just gotta tell it how it is, you know?
Cole, what about your adjustments?
I kind of was going to say something along the lines of Nathan about, you know, you kind of find your time to play games. Like he does it at night. And for me, we had, me and my wife have different schedules where I work 4 days a week and, like a swing shift. And so I have 3 days off and she works like a normal day shift. So during my days off when she's at work, I have, you know, 8 hours all to myself to just do whatever I want and play as much games as I want. So when she comes home, I'm less inclined to want to play games or, you know, spend that time with her. So it works for us. Now, if we ever get on a normal schedule, I don't know how much she's going to like me playing, you know, Mass Effect 2 at night, mm-hmm. but it's still going to happen because, I got to have some time to play my games. And she's really understanding. Like, you know, I think last week I said something where, oh, I had to ask permission to play. And she's like, you don't have to ask permission. And I was like, I know I don't, but, you know, I want to make sure that you're okay with me playing instead of if you wanted assuming. To watch something. Yeah, instead of assuming, just picking up the controller and, like, she's in the middle of an episode of whatever show she's watching, and I just turn it off. And
that's a whole other issue, bogarting the TV.
Yeah, especially when we only have one right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's it's interesting. Like, I think now, like, coming from dating where you're going to spend more, you know, more time with your significant other and less time with games, especially when you live apart, living together makes that transition for you where you can play while they're around, or you got to find your times when you can play, when they're, you know, your alone time, like Ethan and Nathan said. So it's interesting. Like, I'm playing more games than I have in years, in the last, probably the last couple years.
Do you think that would change if your schedule's synced up?
I think it would change a little bit, because it would be harder for me to find time just to drop 4 hours out of my day into a game.
Yeah.
But
I think that to me is my biggest. That's the thing I don't think they grasp with the distance, is that the blocks of time, not the that you're playing every now and like consistently, but just like 4 or 5 hours gone. Just I don't even blink an eye at that. So
yeah, but my comparison to that is the Desperate Housewives marathons and shit like that.
Like shit like that.
it's the same idea.
It's
though.
True. It's true.
It's a different format, but that's hard to hard to relate sometimes.
That's what I'm always looking for, is the other activities to relate it to. That, you know, this is my hobby. You know, this is, you know, I'll play tennis. That's pretty much my only other hobby. Listen to music, watch movies. You know, but it's just, everybody has their hobbies that they're spending, you know, a few hours of their week doing, and got to kind of find those equivalents. But that's the other problem with, I don't know, gaming kind of has that negative side, that negative perspective to it, that's this big waste of time, and I'm always constantly defensive of that. But
that's why the man cave is so important to our survival, because we, you know, like, it's like my setup right now, we have one TV, and, you know, we watch a lot of things on laptops and stuff, but, you know, we can hook my laptop to the TV and she can watch her 30 episodes of Say Yes to the Dress in a row. And I'm okay with that if I'm doing something else.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want my time, my share, my fair shake at playing video games too. And she doesn't have to hook up the computer to the TV. She can still be doing that, but, you know, it's the Xbox needs the TV, or the PlayStation needs the TV. It's not like I can just take it on the go with me.
And I think that, and I've said this to Aubrey, and she never believes, I mean, she always thinks I'm over exaggerating, but I say, you wouldn't like me if that part of my brain can't be stimulated. You know what I mean? It's like there's something about gaming that I just need, you know, to some sort of release, you know, that I can't do it. Because in real life, I don't have the option to battle aliens and zombies and that kind of stuff, because it hasn't happened yet.
She'll also be thankful when you save her.
And that has never been – that is an argument that she never buys into.
I wonder why.
my next question, as far as, like, schedules go, I know a few of my friends, we make fun of one in particular that has a very specific game night that is the only night you will see him on Xbox Live. Not because it's, like, a flexible schedule, but that is, like, the only night he is allowed to play. Like, I understand. I've already started to notice my schedule adjusting. Like I said, we see each other on specific days, and we podcast on Tuesday nights, and, you know, that other things adjust. So I kind of have a rough gaming schedule, but I can't ever imagine being locked in. Do you guys ever feel like you're locked in, or does that work?
No. That's a big thing is I have never tried to lock her in on things, and I've just asked the same thing. I'm getting better about knowing when we need to take care of our responsibilities, but that's something that is not going to happen, because I'm a fucking man.
And I'm the same way as Ethan. Like, I don't feel like I have the right to lock her into anything. So as long as that thing goes both ways, then that's cool with me.
Nathan?
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, I don't think that's ever going to be the case either. I think, obviously, we'll talk about, you know, other things later that are impacting my life right now.
Yeah.
But I think as priorities shift, women look at priorities and relationships a little bit differently than we do. And I think where a lot of times we, like, men have that interest, especially after you've been in a relationship for a while, to, like, make sure that you as a person are doing okay. And if we're okay, that means we can be okay to other people. I think women can work a little bit opposite sometimes, that they're looking out for everybody else first before them, just, you know, in my limited experience. So I think even the way that we view that, you know, where we look at it as locking in, I think they look at it differently. So,
Before we move on to kind of the family section, I wanted to we talked about some games that worked kind of in the dating cycle, but what games have gotten you in trouble or have fallen on their face? what ones in particular do you notice yourselves kind of staying away from?
So one day when I got Grand Theft Auto 4, I was playing it, and I think Nathan might remember me saying this to Gar, but I said, "Hey, I just had sex with a prostitute in a car in a park." And she just was like, "What?" So she wasn't real thrilled about that game. But, I mean, you know, she's pretty easygoing when it comes to everything, so it wasn't a big deal, but she was just like, "I can't believe you just said that."
Well, I have to make kind of an adjustment to what I said about not being locked in anything, because there is one game that I am not allowed to play, and that is World of Warcraft, and that's kind of a consensus that she and I came to, because I was into that game big time, and I think one time she called and was like, "Hey, babe, what are you doing?" I was like, "I can't talk right now. I'm battling through Azeroth, and you understand the pressure I'm under." And I think at that point, she was kind of like, "Really, dude? Really?" And we weren't engaged yet, so that was a wedding vow, is that we'll promise to love each other and that Ethan will no longer play World of Warcraft.
Wow, deal breaker.
Yeah,
works
that's,
into the
that's,
wedding.
That's in her wedding ring engraved, I think.
Yeah, it is. Right next to the one ring to rule them all. So that's
till death do us part. Thou shalt not travel to Azeroth. But Nathan, anything stand out?
You know, I think the games I tend to pick now tend to be grotesquely violent. Like, if you can blow its head off, I'll probably end up buying it. But pretty much anything that I play, I got a surround system in my house that pretty much kicks ass if I'm playing Call of Duty or something. And I need to remember to turn that down when she's asleep. So it's not necessarily content this time. It's time, place, manner of what I'm choosing to play. But yeah, I play a lot of violent games. I got to keep that in check.
Yeah, I've also found myself shopping for a really good headset. I think that'll also be in my future. I think World of Warcraft is probably the scariest one out there. I'm really curious. Like, I don't have anything that really stands out, but like I've said in past podcasts, I'll play some, weird ass Japanese RPGs or just weird, Nobi Nobi Boy. There we go. Like, some of those games, even like maybe borderline games of shame, that just trying to explain what they are when they're on the screen, like that.
Just don't buy Catherine when it comes out.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
That game looks frightening. But yeah, I'm interested to see what the reactions are to those. But I don't know. She's taken to connectables and didn't think I looked ridiculous playing it. So there's some understanding there. But I guess I'm more wary of the weird ones that'll bring into the house. But
I can see on Nobi Nobi Boy how she may walk in and go, "Justin, why are you got two battling penises on the screen?
Why are you stretching penises all the way to the moon?"
Dude, I think that they've got to be to Jupiter by now, man.
That's a big penis.
Not gonna lie. Oh, all right. Last relationship phase I want to talk through.
You're gonna say the last hurrah?
Yeah, that one.
The end of life as we know it.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Well, we're all looking forward to it, Nathan. Nathan's actually the only one with legitimate experience here. But when kids kind of come into the picture and the family grows up and more responsibilities kind of come into play, and we've talked a bit on the site and in past podcasts about, gaming around kids and raising kids around games, but just more of the effect on your game time. And Nathan, how's gaming been since you had the twins?
Well, a little bit of disclaimer, because my situation is atypical. I have twins, so that throws a whole other slew of time constraints and responsibilities in there. But obviously, there's no way I'd change anything in the world, you guys. I mean, I think if somebody told me right now that I had to give up gaming for my kids, and I know that's a strong statement, it happened in a heartbeat, because I think that's
what?
Just... I know. I can't believe I'm saying this. But...
That's weird, dude. You need to get priorities in check.
But luckily, that's not the case. But no, I think, you know, the way that it changes is it's the same thing like with the comments I made with the marriage is, you know, on top of the other stuff that I mentioned, you've got kids that are developing that are hungry every 2.5 hours that go through 10 diapers a day times two. You know, it's just there's a lot of other things and one person can't be expected to take care of two kids by themselves. So, you know, we both have a completely equal relationship in how we take care of our kids. So, yeah, I mean, that's really reduced the amount of time that I can play, you know, during kind of peak hours during the day. But I still do kind of do the night stuff. I'll play an hour or two at night when I go to bed. So it's balanced. And I think that's also because my kids don't wake up every 3 hours screaming because something's wrong. They sleep through the night now. But
I mean, does your wife still have like kind of like that's kind of your, I don't know, your downtime, your alone time playing 1 or 2 hours of games at night? Like, does she have that kind of activity too, that she understands what you're doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, she's much more of a, like, our DVR is full pretty much all the time. So, you know, she's got her show she really likes to kind of ground herself, to kind of gain a little bit of balance. So she understands that, and I think she's going to be supportive of that unless, you know, it's a situation where I can't function during the day at my job.
Yeah.
With kids and with her, and I've never allowed it to get to that point. So I think that's the balance point that I think we've all got to make sure that we're seeking. And if, you know, if something's inhibiting that, you know, we really got to take a look at ourselves.
Good point.
Yeah. But I do, and at Lacey, I got to give you props on this one because the Runes of Magic thing started because when my kids were waking up every 2 hours, Katie and I pretty much decided that for her to be able to feed the kids at night, I would stay up throughout the night and then nap during the day. So it's kind of like we went in cycles. Mm-hmm. So I actually had 3 characters on World of Warcraft within the first month and a half at level 20 because I was playing the demo. And that's kind of what got me hooked. And that's like when I talk about the kinds of games that I choose now, you know, the MMORPGs where you can just stop playing in the middle of it as long as you're not in the middle of an instance or, you know, some sort of a clan thing. Like that's a lot easier for me to play now than some of the other ones. So that's just a genre that's kind of attracting me a little bit more now.
I can see that it's easier to have some downtime there until you hit that other point.
Right.
Ethan Cole, any concerns?
Well, Nathan, I wanted to say this before you had the twins, but no. I think it's a good point that, you know, the thing is. You know, when video games, I mean, we talk about the word addiction a lot, and we sometimes make a joke of it, but I think Nathan made a really good point, is that, you know, there comes stages in our life where, you know, inherently we put stuff down, and we know that we can't do it as much anymore. And I think that, you know, with marriage kind of came, hey, I can't drink like an idiot all the time, and I think with gaming and video and having kids, you know, those kids need your attention and they call for it first, and to be able to be you know, open with that and not just be one of those crazies online that you hear about, you know, abusing their kids or neglecting their kids with games. I mean, I think that's the big thing. And so I think it is nice to see that you can be a crazy ass gamer that cries when their characters die and that can translate into a good father, you know. I mean, that's reassuring. So
yeah,
no concerns.
I was gonna say, and I think the trade-off is, you know, I'm not, you know, besides checking the website and keeping up on the podcast and stuff, you know, it's hard for me to keep current with a lot of stuff. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I can't keep gaming. I think that's the thing, is you figure out how to make it work. And, you know, the one thing that I do have trouble with, as I say that, you know, the MMORPGs for me tend to work a little bit easier. You know, I've got people in my clan that their mothers, their fathers, that they literally sit at their computer with their kids on their lap as they're playing. And for me, that's a line that I'm not willing to cross at this point with a 4-month-old. You know? At this point.
Yeah. Maybe in the future.
If they're like 6, they could join the clan with me, you know?
No, I mean, it's like Nathan said, like, I think you have to have a balance with everything once you do have kids. And if anybody, I know Justin's watched The Guild, and there's that lady with her like 3 kids in the pen while she's playing World of Warcraft, and that's pretty ridiculous. But I know Justin and I have talked about, you know, once we have children, like introducing them to games, and that might be more of a focus that we take as the kids get older. Obviously not when they're babies, but you know, when they're, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7. I mean, we had a whole podcast kind of about that before. I think that from transitioning from my own selfish addiction to getting my kids addicted might be something, you know, not necessarily addicted, but you know what I'm saying? Like getting them to play will be fun, you know, introducing them to games I've played in the past and where video games have come and how far they've come from, you know, the early days and to where they are whenever I have kids. It'll be interesting.
Playing the digital catch with your son.
Yeah. They won't get hit in the face and lose a tooth or something anymore.
Yeah, but every time that happened, that was my own fault. when I let the softball hit me in the face because it was supposed to be a softball.
Yeah, I think Ethan's got a good story about that one in high school baseball.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that.
But yeah, I think that's kind of the next transition is like that, you know, that phase out, especially after the newborns, and as you know, as they have the, I don't know, the really the developmental phase where they need a lot of focused attention, and I don't know, I'll probably be overly paranoid with what types of, you know, media are kind of bombarding them, but you know, that next phase when you're able to interact with them more and figure out what they like and what they don't like I think that's kind of that next stage of my gaming life that I really look forward to. So
yeah,
the only thing that sucks about when we do have kids is they're gonna take up all of our time playing, you know. they're gonna be hogging the systems and
I just gotta make enough money to have multiple caves.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, I'll have multiple systems.
Okay.
any final thoughts before we move on, gentlemen? I think we're good. Yeah. All right. No, that was very productive conversation. Thanks for joining us, Nathan, on that. It kind of, when we heard you want to be on the podcast, it kind of kickstarted that topic. So it's definitely something overdue for us to get into, and I'm sure we'll revisit it again in the future. Before we get out of here, I want to touch base on some updates to HorribleNight.com. Officially added Gift Tour to as a member of the Cursed. You'll be seeing hopefully at least one or two articles from him a week. He's definitely got a different style than Ethan and Cole and myself.
Get out your dictionaries and thesaurus.
He's gonna learn you something, but has a very has a lot of experience playing games since the Commodore 64, and we're going to be focused on some retro reviews, but also some more industry commentary type stuff from him. And then we also introduced our first Think of the Adults article this week. Ethan handled that for us. And then next week and over the next 2 weeks, you're going to see a lot more from our Game of the Year discussion. So that'll actually be the topic of nominees for next week's podcast. So look forward to that. And so let's get out of here with some last-minute game industry shout-outs. Actually, we'll start with Ethan so Nathan can kind of get the groove here.
Well, I was actually on Kotaku today, and probably didn't pronounce that right, but that's okay.
It's okay. They stole your password, so.
we can talk about it at a later point, but they had a little short called Modern War Gear Solid 3, and I thought it was hilarious, and so I watched the first one. And I love to see that kind of stuff. I love to see people, you know, take video games. And, I mean, you know, the movie, taking movies and kind of running with them and combining stuff and being funny with that it was always entertaining. But I like to see video games get involved with that. So that was pretty creative, and I would suggest anybody, and we'll put the link up on there when we post the podcast. But that's a pretty funny series.
So what – I mean, it's just – what's the premise other than combining – Metal Gear.
Yeah, that's the premise. I mean, no, they've got a storyline involving Ghost from Modern Warfare 2 and Solid Snake.
Okay.
It's kind of like conglomerates of all the villains come together. So okay.
It's like the Expendables.
It kind of is. You'll have to. It's tough to explain, but you'll watch. It's entertaining. I appreciated it.
You'll watch it and you'll like it.
Yeah, you will.
All right, Nathan.
Yeah, my two, Diablo 3 and The Old Republic. I've been scouting out games that are going to come up, relatively soon, and joined information listeners for the first time as far as updates on the game. Ever since I tested, I wrote an article about it a couple months ago about game testing. And I've been really fascinated with game development and story development. So these are the first two that I signed up for as far as keeping up to date with character development, story development, any new videos, anything like that. So conceptually, I think they both are my top priority list as far as purchases in the next year, year and a half. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you're building a whole computer to play them, right?
Exactly. I've got some upgrades. The PC that I bought last December was with the full intention of upgrading well beyond what I bought it as. So
I'm really curious about the Old Republic. Like, that's it's got the muscle behind it to actually make a dent in World of Warcraft. But I'm also of the mind anymore that it could they could both coexist very well too. So, I really love the Old Republic Star Wars mythology. So I'm just happy to see more of that more than anything.
Yeah, and I definitely think for me, like, that's the thing. It's a story development. I think they've always done a good job with the series, and that's the neat updates on the site is when they add content and they add, you know, they're basically building the history before the game comes out. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Coleman?
Well, it came out this week that Sony is still praising physical media when it comes to, like, going forward in the game industry from here, and I just think that they're missing the boat on digital downloads. They're saying that retail's been around for thousands of years because you can find what products you are, and, you know, the retail stores will show you what products you can buy, and I just think they're missing the boat with if they're going to go with their PlayStation 4 and not have a concentration of digital media. And, you know, they can organize a online store, especially for, like, the big games where people can find them easily. It's just I think they're just kind of being lazy about it.
Yeah, I was starting to think about that. I was like, people have learned how to navigate online stores on the web, and, like, it's just a matter of time before they figure out that right experience on the console. And it's just, yeah, Sony worries me, man. Like, the one thing I've loved about the Xbox 360 and Microsoft's approach to it is, especially, like, you know, we've talked about their dashboard updates, but they're continually making updates where you can see they're just kind of trying things out for the future. And the fact that, you know, you don't get them when the games come out, but you can download 360 games now versus, you know, you couldn't do that when the console came out, that they're making strides to have a pretty solid platform going on to whatever the next version of the Xbox is and the one beyond that. And you're not really seeing that from Sony. I mean, they invested a lot of time into, you know, home and
Invested a lot of time and money into the Blu-ray format too. So
yeah, and then
I see why they want to go forward with that.
They tried to do the PSP Go with, you know, downloadable games, but they screwed that up. And it's just, I have more confidence in Microsoft, but, you know, Sony's a big boy. They'll figure something out. I want to give a shout out to Justin Shemp, who sent us in a question that I wanted to address, just because there are a lot of trailers that came out during the Video Game Awards this weekend. Biggest one related to us and our Mass Effect obsession is they had the reveal trailer for Mass Effect 3, and just wanted to talk about what everybody thought about that. Cole, what was your reaction?
Well, I'm interested in it. If it's gonna be set on Earth, the whole game, I don't know if that's gonna work as well as the other two. I enjoyed traveling around space. Like, the thing with Mass Effect, the thing with Mass Effect and me is, like, and I don't know if any other gamer has ever thought this when they're playing those games, is like, holy shit, this is, like,
huge.
What if this actually happened? Like, what if there were mass relays discovered, and, like, all these other worlds where you could travel to, and all this stuff, and, like, all this alien life and all the technology that's involved with that, and then just kind of coming to Earth. Like, we've seen aliens attack the Earth before in other forms of media, and I know it's going to be good. It's BioWare. Like, I have all confidence in the world in them, but if it's just on Earth, I'm a little worried.
I would be shocked if it's just on Earth. I mean, just the name Mass Effect, like, that, that's what people associate with it, is just the huge universe. And the most surreal moment of that was, I think, in the first game when you realize you can travel to the Milky Way and travel to Earth. And
yeah, exactly.
I was like, this is, they're actually projecting this as a potential future, and that kind of makes it cool. But
yeah,
the other, so the trailer focuses on, you know, the attack on Earth, a different Marine, and he's basically saying, I hope Shepard gets here in time. And I don't know, like, that kind of gave me chills, just if you think about how well they've built that character up, that you matter that much in the universe, especially because a lot of that game's plot revolves around the fact that humans are like the newest, you know, alien race out of these aliens that all coexist. Like, we're the young ones. We kind of hijacked technology, or, you know,
we're the new
we kind of got lucky with discovering technology. And, but he's the guy making a name for the human race. And there's just, I don't know, there's something that gives me chills about that. And I just think they'll continue to build on that. And the other thing that's they've also talked about is that it might have multiplayer in it. And I don't know. I'm concerned with how that'll work. But at this point, I have to give BioWare the benefit of the doubt. So did either Moses' brother see that trailer?
I'm waiting because I need to play the other two, and I know that I'm going to get addicted to both of them, so I didn't want to watch anything and then be like, God dang it, and then have to like shift all my attention away from everything else now. So I'm going to wait, but it looks awesome. I'm going to have to check it out now that you guys talk about it.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it's eerie how different Ethan and I are, but when we play games, it's kind of the same thing. Is I still haven't played the other two. I really want to play the other two, but it's going to take up way more of my time than I have right now, and it's just not ready for it yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but if I buy it for you for Christmas or a little bit later because it's coming out for PS3, oh my God, you're going to fall in love with it.
Yep. All right.
You might have to sell one of your kids.
I think that alien race exists. They probably would buy some humans. All right, on that positive note of selling children to wrap up our responsible discussion of adult gaming. Gentlemen, again, thanks for joining me. And to our listeners out there, thanks for listening along. We'd be interested in your feedback in these types of episodes of the show. A little bit heavier discussion, but definitely something that we're passionate about, and be looking for your feedback to see what you thought. So hit us up on our contact form or email us at simon@horriblenight.com, and we'll get back with you, give you a shout out on the show. And next week we will be back with our Games of the Year nominees discussion, and we will see you then. Take it easy.
Bye.